Welcome to another episode of Friends in Wonder, a place where we invite you to explore meaningful topics without judgment or limits.
Brought to you by two lifelong friends sharing their insights.
I'm Joe Luther.
And I'm Vince Kern.
And we've got great topics lined up for you each week, so be sure to subscribe, like, and even share with your friends.
Ever since Joe and I were walking our dogs as children, we always like to look at things on the horizon and wonder about how they might be in the future. And after a lot of years of doing that, I think we've gotten pretty good at it. So today we're going to wonder about something that is on the horizon. It's artificial intelligence, and we're going to tell you a little bit about what it is, what we found out about it, and where we think it might be going. And we think it's an important topic because it definitely already has an impact on many people's lives, and sooner or later will have an impact on all of our lives. So, Joe, you've done some research into definitions of what it is. Maybe you can kick us off with that.
Yeah, we're not friends in everything you need to know about a particular topic. We are friends in wonder, and we are certainly wondering about the impact of AI. And, you know, it comes to us in a package that it's going to make our lives better, and probably to some degree, whatever we're going to define as artificial intelligence has made things easier for us. But the question is, where is it going? And as you said, it's been in the news lately because there are billions of dollars being invested in this technology. And my guess is, Vince, that people investing in this technology are not doing it strictly for altruistic reasons to make the human experience easier. My guess is there might be some money to be made or some, I don't know.
Control?
Control was the word I was thinking of, but I was trying to come up with a euphemistic way of saying it. But let's first start with, what is the definition of artificial intelligence, and why are we talking about it today? Because, first of all, artificial intelligence, Vince, goes back as far as calculators, you know, or simple computers when we were kids. And they have like a definition that really breaks down. Like, there's this concept of weak AI and strong AI, and weak AI is more of a single function thing. They even say that automated driving vehicles is a form of weak AI because it doesn't have to do any real deep learning. It's just taking a computer program and functioning according to a certain set of rules. Siri is another perfect example, or Alexa, the personal assistants. There's learning thermostats that we're all becoming familiar with. And then there's strong AI, and that's really what's in the news today. This ChatGPT is a perfect example of it. And those are, you know, we've also are all aware of the robots that are out there on the internet that are capable of learning our habits and giving us advertising and that kind of thing. Those are a little more sophisticated learning bots.
And physically mimicking humans, physical robots, not just computer robots.
Right. So the ChatGPT is more along the lines of this language type robot that you can talk to and will actually go very deep into learning what it is you're asking and answering accordingly.
And we're going to give some examples of where that is today, but I wanted to circle back to the weak AI examples and start talking about some of the things we're wondering about, which I guess could be described as unintended consequences in some ways, or maybe it's intended consequences. And that's what I think we're wondering about today, and not taking a stance. I know we sound maybe a little cynical about this at this point, but let's talk about some of these weak AI example. So a calculator is more of a one function tool. And basically what it's doing is a function of the brain for you and giving you a result. Okay, that's fine. But personal assistants like Siri and Alexa and learning thermostats and self-driving vehicles, which are all now part of many, many, many people's lives, are examples of data collection that can be used for other things as well. And that's where weak AI examples start us wondering about some of the things that might be on the horizon. Now, I think it was Colorado you mentioned when we were researching this podcast that literally took control of smart thermostats during a power outage and to conserve energy so that they could get back online easier. You know, that begs the question, okay, well, what if we sign an agreement with our energy provider that gives them control and down the road, they just decide that our house needs to be this temperature and that's it. And we don't have control over our thermostats anymore. So that's right, some examples. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember, Vince, when we were talking about this, there was somebody described this as, you know, these technologies as kind of trying to parse out the difference between an interesting and fun toy that brings convenience to our life or a trustworthy tool. And I think the thermostat example is a perfect breakdown of that.
Yeah. Dichotomy. And I got another one for you here, Joe. Smartphones. Okay. The phone was a one function device for I don't know how many years, hundreds, at least 100 years. Yeah. It was a one function device. You pick it up, you call somebody, and you talk to them. And that's all it could do. Steve Jobs comes along and says, I got this new shiny thing, and it's a phone, but it's also a camera. And there are these things called apps. Remember when you didn't know what a phone app was? And this app can tell you what the weather is. Oh my, how convenient. And you know, we all glommed onto it and look at how habitual our relationship with the phone has become. Now, if Steve Jobs had come out and said, this thing in the future of this thing is your 8-year-old child will be able to access videos of people scantily dressed and they are trying to imbue them with a self-image that they want to share for marketing purposes or cultural purposes or whatever, I don't think we would have been so eager to embrace the technology. Certainly, we would have asked a lot more questions, which I think right. is what we're doing today, right?
Right, exactly. It breaks down that idea. Is it a great toy for improving our life, or is it an untrustworthy tool that's monitoring our every moment, you know, when we're on the internet or talking or searching or doing anything? So yeah, that's where we're getting at with this.
So the way this became news, bigger news to us, is that it's becoming bigger news all over. And Microsoft has just announced in the last couple of weeks at Davos a $29 billion investment in OpenAI, which is the research lab that built ChatGPT. And interestingly enough, Elon Musk was one of the original backers of OpenAI. He resigned from the board of directors in 2018 to avoid conflicts with Tesla's AI findings. And he's been critical of Microsoft's investment of ChatGPT recently, and in December called ChatGPT scary good and warned, we are not far from dangerously strong AI. And as part of the Davos convention, Wall Street Journal actually had a forum on artificial intelligence, and the Microsoft CEO was talking about how we should all embrace this because it's going to make our jobs easier. It's going to eliminate tasks that has already been done for us. And then we'll be able to do other important tasks and create higher paying jobs. Now, I'm not so sure that's been the way technology has been proven to do for the worker, but that's a whole nother podcast. But there were many headlines that came out of that in the Wall Street Journal and stories that we took a deep look at, and we're going to mention a few of these, and this kind of tells you where it's at today. Let's talk about the education aspect of it, because unbeknownst to me, artificial intelligence is already being used by students to write essays and other things in various disciplines in the classroom. This is a vulnerable time for students because literacy has declined. And according to this company that is called CopyLinks, which is a company that sells tools to detect plagiarism in AI, plagiarism appeared in nearly 50% of all academic submissions during the pandemic, as opposed to 35% before the pandemic. Now, one could say that might just be because AI has developed at a faster pace that more people are using it, but it's giving students a tool to cheat. Now, there's a big debate about whether one should use AI and find its value or whether it should be banned. And in fact, it's currently banned in some school districts like in New York and Seattle and Los Angeles. But there was a professor at one university, and this is how what he did. He wanted to have to see if it could be a valuable tool. So he had students write a 600-word essay using ChatGPT and then think of stronger questions to elicit a stronger response by ChatGPT to make it better. And then finally, edit the essay for tone and tailor it to the intended audience. And his goal was to hope to inspire students to learn to incorporate the tools rather than to cheat better.
To actually use your mind when you're using the tool rather than using the tool to supplement or replace your reasoning process.
Exactly. And he had a great quote. He said, "Just because there is a machine that can help me lift up a dumbbell doesn't mean my muscles will develop. In the same way, just because there is a machine that can write an essay doesn't mean my mind will develop." And another article talked about what jobs people should fear replacement in, flat out sort of replacement. And some of them, I'm going to read this list and we can chat about them real quick. One of them is near and dear to my heart, which is publishing. And in AI has been proven to do a pretty good job with copy editing. It's something that it can summarize and making an article concise and grammar. It really does a pretty good job.
Yeah, I think we all have familiarity with that when we write a text and get told, the underlines or the italics or whatever come up to show us. Yeah, and that has to do with grammar as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But when you ask it to do an essay, it will produce a story with citations. But people have found that more often than not, and this is a quote, the citations are just made up. And that's a known failure right now. And the guy says, honestly, we don't know how to fix that. But let's move on. There's Wall Street, people who do, a vast amount of works in Excel sheets that could be done by AI, interns who all kinds of research.
Graphic designers.
This was interesting. You could literally tell AI to build a website and have it returned to you.
And it's a pretty good one.
That could have value. I'm not saying, again, we're not saying these things don't have value. We're wondering about where they might go. Now, near and dear to your heart, Mr. Counselor Esquire Joe Luther, lawyers. Lawyers, I mean, they're talk, think about it from your perspective. How do you see that?
Well, I don't think I'm ready to let a computer defend me if I'm being charged with something in a court of law. But I can imagine that if it can reason together any kind of legal argument, it would probably do a pretty good job of it.
And there is right now a company that is offering an attorney $1 million if they put an earpiece in a case in front of the Supreme Court and use the chatbot to argue their case.
I'm not sure that the Supreme Court would be a part of that theatrics yet, but maybe, who knows?
Well, and the name of the company is something about fixing tickets. So I think they're maybe dabbling in.
Okay, so I might let a robot handle my ticket citation, but I'm not sure if I'd want anything too more serious than that at this point. When we were talking about this, you said this is like an octopus with 1 million different arms. And my guess is it's probably more than 1 million different arms.
Yeah, it is. And then that's part of the problem of it being, I want to use the word insidiously inserted into human culture. And frankly, that's what kind of But that's what scares me a little bit. Here's another point that that article made, which I think is interesting. They were talking about the fact that artificial intelligence can now render drawings and artwork and all kinds of things. Music, that artificial intelligence can create music. So how does that impact things like ownership of music? If somebody uses artificial intelligence to do a cover of my hit song and turns it around, am I going to get paid for that? I mean, there are definite royalty laws and things that are out there right now. Or better yet, if a person uses an AI created piece of art to start with and then paints it into their own canvas, are they really an artist or are they an editor or what, what do they become? Now, those are all sort of real philosophical questions, but.
And ethical. And, this idea that computers can create music. I have no doubt that computers can create music. Whether it's something that speaks to the soul of a human is a whole different topic. There was a great musical that I think Brian May from Queen had running in London for, I don't know, for at least 10 years. I know I saw it when I was there. It was called We Will Rock You. And the whole idea is it was this futuristic setting where humans had become like robots and they had become devoid of emotion and a little bit like a Dirty Dancing kind of a thing where if you outlaw fun and passion, this is what the human experience looks like. And of course, in that musical, they ended up finding some old CD or whatever of Bohemian Rhapsody. And slowly this resistance of kids started embracing music with an actual human beat to it instead of this computerized computerized music. And I guess my feeling is that is an interesting topic an interesting way to transition into the next topic. And that is, what do we do with this AI? How does this really enhance the human experience? And are we engaging in transhumanism?
All technology has been managed to be scaled up. So this is definitely going to get scaled up. It's going to get better. It's going to get faster. It's going to get less expensive. But, you have people like Microsoft behind it. You talked about, you don't know if it's the correct answer. You also don't know what is the input. So you get this garbage in, garbage out concept. And that, Amen. To me, jumps to the question of, who's controlling the information that's input? So, I'm just going to jump hypothetically 5-10 years from now to say I use ChatGPT or any other AI thing that's out there, and am I going to get a slanted answer based on things that are censored, like ideas that we just don't want people to talk about?
5 to 10 years from now? That's already happening, Vince. I mean, come on. We already know that search engines and any kind of information that we try to get on the internet is going to have the slant of whomever programmed it. That's just, to me, that's the other fundamental issue, is that if we're going to turn over decisions, and some people, some philosophers and political scientists think that we should be turning these kinds of decisions over to machines. I'm very concerned about that because we don't know who's programming these things and with what biases. And I think that's the big issue. Before we just embrace this new shiny toy of AI, we have to wonder about it a little bit. And that's the point of today's episode.
I want to talk about one more article quickly, because it really kind of gets to the deeper conversation about where AI might be headed. And there was a Princeton professor of psychology and neuroscience who specializes in consciousness. And we talk a lot about consciousness, and that's,
well, yeah, I think we should actually do an episode on consciousness one day, but that's another story.
Yeah, and I agree. But he talks about the dangers of building machines that are smarter than us and giving them control over our world. And he talks about whether machines need to be programmed with empathy and all of the things that humans have that computers don't necessarily exist from a psychological perspective. And what he says is, for humans, consciousness is not just about self, but part of an evolutionary tool that helps us create an empathetic, pro-social behavior. His take is basically that he thinks they should be programmed in that way, because without consciousness, AIs will be sociopaths.
Right. That's the whole thing. I had a feeling that's where you're going with this. And of course, talking about Hail the Computer is a perfect example. You know, in the Space Odyssey movie, that's a perfect example of how a non-empathetic computer can take over functions and dole out sociopathic behavior. And I think that's the big issue here, because what we're asking in a wondering way is, how much do we want to give to artificial intelligence? And there's many people out there that think that we should start turning over decision-making to artificial intelligence. And I say, wait a second, because these answers are not.
What kind of decisions are you talking about, Joe?
Oh, well, what I was going to say is that these answers aren't black and white. A perfect example would be, in talking about Davos, one of the fellows who's instrumental in some of the agendas and policies of the World Economic Forum is Yuval Noah Harari. And he gives a long example. You can YouTube it, but he gives a long example of how, if we just want to decide what kind of car should I buy, some people would say that you should let artificial intelligence make that decision for you rather than do it yourself, and that it would figure out all the data points that you need to know about you personally, as well as what's going on in the world geopolitically, and give you the best informed decision. And I say, wait a second, I want to make that decision. I don't want to be turning over a decision that isn't black and white to a machine that's only capable of black and white.
Mm-hmm. So on one hand, you have the aggravating steps of selecting a car, which it could be a convenient tool to help you narrow it down. But on the other hand,
Think it's aggravating, but some people think it's exciting, right?
Yeah, exactly. It takes away the joy of making a personal decision about something that is so expensive. Now, that's maybe a stretch to say that a computer will mandate what kind of car you should drive. But then again, maybe it's not.
Well, and then there's another example that I saw in my research on this topic, and that's this, there's this company out there called Ever After AI, and it's a service that's out there right now, so that if a loved one dies, you can program, there's a program you got to fill out or whatever, and input the data, and it will create a avatar that becomes your deceased loved one. And some will say, well, okay, that's a great idea. Give an example, like the couple that's been retired for 30 some years and lived happily ever after, and then sadly one of them dies. Well, you can continue on with that loved one with this avatar. And some people might say that's a great idea. What do you think?
Well, let's play that out a little bit. So if you can create a virtual avatar on a computer and have a conversation with a loved one who's passed, that might be a very soothing and helpful tool in your grieving process, I suppose. I wonder about the combination of a physical avatar, a robotic avatar, and imbuing it with that same personality, if you will.
Well, and we're getting there with technology. And my concern is that if you say, okay, this is fine for helping people with grief, then what about the lonely hearts that don't know how to have a relationship in the first place? There's going to be a program out there for virtual avatars to have relationships with. And I think that speaks to this whole idea of transhumanism and whether we let this technology go too far in the human experience.
Well, okay, transhumanism is something I'm not as familiar with as I think I should be. It's something I'm going to continue to learn more about and wonder about. But can you help me out with the definition of transhumanism?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's probably textbooks. I'm sure there are textbooks and courses in college on transhumanism. So again, no expert here. But I think the fundamental issue with transhumanism is this idea that these people who promote it think that technology can help raise the human experience to a higher level or a better level. And so you really start out with this concept that the human experience is something that requires technology so that it can be improved. And I think one of the early examples of it, because this goes back, this idea goes back a long way. One of the early examples of it is Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, where you use kind of a hybrid human with technology that creates this creature that I think is an apropos example to use today, because it's this whole idea of be careful what you create with technology. And of course, Frankenstein came back to bite its creator. And I think that's a good way to continue asking the question, what do we want to do with this technology and how do we want to allow it into our lives?
Well, didn't you define, I think was interesting when you talked about the different types of tools that are being used in transhumanism philosophy. And it's not just like computer to computer artificial intelligence. There's other things that...
Right. Anything that can help improve the human experience. So they say there's like these four super technologies out there that can help with that. Nanotechnology.
That's like where you would ingest something into a bloodstream and it goes and...
Yeah. I mean, some might say gene therapy or whatever. You know, there's biotechnology, which is a hybrid of that, and information technology, which is what we're talking about today, and cognitive science. All of these things are about kind of turning the human into something different, like a superhuman is what they say. And again, I'm not here to debate whether that's a good idea or a bad idea. It's just that when you talk about artificial intelligence and this new form of super deep learning bot that's out there, are we looking at it with our eyes wide open? And do we really want this coming into the human experience? In our relationships, and you know, there's all sorts of discussion about virtual this and virtual that. How far do we want to go with this?
Right, and there are some apps out there and tools that can detect essays or other things generated by artificial intelligence. So, you know, even that I wasn't aware of until we started looking into this. So, I think, you know, to sum it up, this is something that, with our busy life, again, with our jobs, our parenting, all the things that take our time away from looking into some of these things. We just wanted to bring it out, look on the horizon and say, whoa, this thing is coming at us fairly quickly, faster than I think we realized until we got hit in the face with some of this news. And we hope that by exploring it today, you have a better understanding of what's out there and are going to continue to wonder with us about this topic.
Yeah, there's a lot of subtopics that we discussed as well that could become future episodes, because we're going to keep an eye on this. And I think it's something worth wondering about, and we'd love to hear any feedback about it as well.
Absolutely. So hit us up at talk@friendsinwonder.com. Share your thoughts on this concept. Tell us if you've had experience with us. And thank you for listening today. We'll be back next time with more interesting topics from Friends in Wonder.